Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, coming from the... Who there?
What happened?
Who there?
Wait a minute.
Things are done. Things are over.
And flat out.
That's the deal. You're listening to Live from the Path. It's going to be hanging out with you tonight. Here's what we got going on the show. Hey, there was an article in... What is that? Dan, I can hear you wiping your face. Herrick has made the mistake of bringing in burgers and wings.
And wraps.
And they're delicious.
It's not a mistake.
I feel like this is going to be a problem.
Hey, man, that buffalo wrap was spicy.
Yeah, it was.
Anyway, here's what we got going on the show tonight. So there was an article in the New York Times. I want to say it was like last week or maybe the week before. And it's what it was, the 27 characteristics of the modern man. Did anybody happen to read that?
Hey,
no.
Man, let me ask you a question.
27 ways to be a modern man.
I feel like you're perpetuating us counting everything. Like the world has switched over to counting everything, and you're only perpetuating it.
What do you mean? That's how they wrote the article. I didn't call them up and say, hey, could you put a count on it?
When's the last time you brought up an article that didn't have a number in it? Of like, here's X number of ways to do X.
Yeah, because it's much harder to read and comment on a whole blob of crap old that someone decided to talk about. But if I can, like, point one, you suck, moving on. Like, that's way easier of a conversation point.
That, and people do those kind of articles all the time because you know when the end is. It's immediate. Like, you know exactly.
Is that why people do
that? Well, I mean, if you read something that's just, here's what it's like to be a modern man. You're going to keep reading through it. You don't know which points are. But if you hear, here's the 15 points of what a modern man looks like,
Hold on a minute. If your article is so poorly written that no one can tell how to be a modern man without numbers.
I need to distinguish between 3 and 8.
Yeah. You know why? It's because people want to customize how they are or are not a modern man based on bullet points.
I'm 20 out of the 27. It's easy to read the points.
That's the thing. It's the same conversation as the fruits of the Spirit. When they say the fruits of the Spirit, all of these things equal fruits of the Spirit, where other people like to pick out the one that they are and the ones that they're not.
I'm number four. Anyway, we're going to talk in general about a blob of information about ways to be a modern man.
It sounds interesting, Ben.
It's very modern.
See if we agree with that. Also, there was a... I read an article about scientists who claim that zapping brains with magnets can treat your belief in God.
I had a guy actually talk to me about that a couple years ago. He was all pumped about it. Just about being zapped by magnets. I mean, I don't know about...
It didn't have anything to do with your religion.
It really didn't have anything to do with God, but just mental health. And I was like, oh.
Anyway.
Hey, what, isn't that the same theory that people used to wear, the magnet bracelets or whatever? It used to help them with wrist ionization or something?
Yeah.
I don't shop on the internet, Mike. I don't know.
For $15.95, they said my whole life would change. My PS3 skills would improve.
I feel like you're referencing this theory that it might not be in the common knowledge of
everyone. It's like the golfers used to wear them. You know, they're like some kind of bracelet with a magnet in it, and it was supposed to be good for your wrist. Yeah. You guys don't hang out with a bunch of golfers.
I remember those.
My mom bought a magnetic mattress.
Oh, okay. Really?
She used to read those things. Yeah. Sorry.
I thought it was fairly.
And she wore a metal shirt so she couldn't leave.
The magnetic didn't help.
Magnetic mattress sounds like something to cure sleepwalking.
It was incredibly. It was like
if you wear iron pants.
Right. Exactly. It was like sleeping on marbles. You wear a shirt that has some kind of metal in it and it keeps you down.
You know what cures sleepwalking? Not sleeping because you're wearing iron pants.
I never said it was comfortable, Foost.
That's tricky. All right. Yeah, anyway, Mike's also got some advice on Dear Life and the Path and some potential Pope style. Mike, are you still thinking through that Pope style?
Yeah, here's the deal. My car broke down, and now it won't do it again. And for some reason, I'm struggling with this somehow, and I feel like God's trying to have at me for some reason, and I can't figure out why.
You're saying you want your car to break down?
Well, that's where the Pope style advice comes. It comes leeching in.
I'm not sure I want to take advice from you.
I want it to break down.
Okay.
Tricky. All right, so that's the Pope-style advice from Mike, who has been, misunderstood, and people believe that he may be the Pope.
Hey. I don't think the Pope ever fixes his car.
No, they probably swap him.
It'd be kind of funny.
Do they have more than one?
Oh, yeah.
That hat doesn't fit under the hood.
Yeah.
There's got to be one of them that runs better. You know, they're like, where's Pope A? Yeah. Give me the Pope-mobile A. It's B. The air doesn't work right or something, or it rides funny.
I'll have to check on that, fellas.
I now want to see the Pope-mobile jacked up and then the Pope underneath it working on it.
With, like, spinning rims and that sort of thing jacked up? Or
no,
just
it's in, up on a jack.
Oh, okay. Oh. All right.
What?
That's a lot less
than... I don't want it up on some kind of suspension.
I want to see it tripped out.
You're not as street as Eric.
Apparently not. I need a lift kit on the Pope-mobile.
Speaking of odd stuff, so, like, I've had, for the last probably 6 months, I've had $50 in Burger King gift cards sitting in my pocket.
And you've never given them to me?
No. They were for homeless dudes. Okay, I have the hardest time, like, they just seem like such awkward interactions for me, just to, like, walk up to somebody and be like, hey, like, it's like I'm trying to sell knockoff Ray-Bans, except for I'm giving away Eats gift certificates. And so these have just been sitting in my bag, and a few in my wallet, trying to figure out a place to do with this. And so last Friday I was at work, and I thought, this is ridiculous. There's people that need food, like, that are hungry, and I'm too much of a pansy just to go see if they want this gift card. This is why the kingdom doesn't grow, is this type of stuff right here.
This sounds like my evangelism strategy so far.
Yeah. Like, you know, maybe I wouldn't bring it up, and maybe they'll just kind of run into this secure carded business that I'm in and demand to see if anybody has any gift cards. And so I laughed. Ha ha, that would never happen. So I decide, here's what I'm going to do. I go out, and I get some coffee, and I just sit right outside the library in downtown Des Moines. I'm just sitting there leaning up against the library. I wasn't there more than 2 minutes, and some dude comes rolling up. And it's obviously a homeless dude. He's got, like, a pair of glasses on with a big crack in one of the lenses. His bike is chained up over to a bench somewhere. And he says, look, hey, man, can I borrow your phone for a minute? I really need to make a phone call. I said, okay. What's the number? I dialed the number for him. And then I handed him the phone. I said, look, you know, if this needs to be a private conversation, I see that your bike's chained up, so I'm pretty sure I could catch you if you made a run for it. So, you know, you feel free to step away. And he goes, no, that's all right. So he's standing within feet of me. And he goes, hey, so-and-so, this is – and then he gave his name. And then he said, hey, look, I'm really sorry about last night. I'm not calling to cause any trouble or anything, but I'm really, really hungry. I was wondering if I could swing by and if you could give me just a few bucks for Burger King. I've been outside since like a couple days ago. He said, slept outside last night and I haven't eaten in a long time. And I was wondering if I could just come by. And it sounds like the answer was yes, that they would come by and give them these gift cards for Burger King. And I'm sitting there listening to this conversation like... okay, Jesus. And so he gets off the phone, and I kind of looked at him. I said, hey, man, do you believe in Jesus? Are you a Jesus man? And he goes, Jesus died for me. He died for everybody. I said, okay. I said, well, I don't know much, fella, but I do know that he wants you to have these because these are sitting in my pocket waiting for someone who needs them from the Burger King, and here's $10 in Burger King gift cards. And he just looked at me for a second, and you could see just like a little tear come out of the bottom of his eye, and I thought, What is the deal? I've been sitting on stuff for 6 months. 6 months. God sends a hungry man for 2 minutes. When I finally said, I don't know what to do, Jesus. I'm just going to sit here for a minute. And then he sends a guy over to pick up the cards. Like, I'm plotting on how I'm going to deliver the thing, what types of things I might say, how I might bring it up. And God really wanted me to just sit there for a minute. And he said, I will send someone to relieve you of them. You don't even have to do anything except own a phone. And I will handle it. And frankly, I didn't even have to own the phone. I could have just said, let's say I didn't have one. It's like, no, I don't have a phone, but I do have $10 in gift cards. Are you hungry? Like, easy stuff. So he walks away. He takes the cards with him. I was there for another 3 minutes. I was listening to last week's show to make sure it wasn't terrible. And so this other guy rides up on a bike, sits down, and starts smoking next to me. And I thought, you could tell by the guy. I thought he had two more coats on than he needed. Was really protective and where his bike was at. I thought, okay, this guy doesn't have a place to live either. And I thought, oh, shoot, I'm going to have to initiate a conversation here because God is just sending people in. And I sat there for a few minutes and I couldn't think of anything. I don't know how to deal with people, right? I can pet a dog. That's my extent of my social skills. And so I got up and I looked over at the guy and I said, hey, look, I have $10 in Burger King gift cards. Could you use them? And he's like, I could definitely use them. I said, sweet. Yeah, and I took my $10 and I gave it to him, and then I went back to work, and that was it. And then I've probably been thinking of that story for 3 days, thinking, I don't know what God has to do to remind me that he will handle things, right? Like whatever plotting and divination that I think is going to go on, that I'm going to set something straight. And there's these things burning a hole in my pocket and said, God, I don't know how to deal with people. And in the end, he says, you don't know how to have to deal with people. You need to know how to deal with me. And so if you have a burden for something that I have you doing, you just need to obey. And if you don't know what else to do, then you sit and wait for me to do it. and then it will things will just open up for you. And that's exactly what has happened. I just sat down, and God sent guys who said keywords Burger King and hungry within a few feet of me, and then I had stuff to give away. And so, but long story short, the reason I was telling that is what A, I feel like God is cool in that story, and I am lame, which is the right balance of how things should be going. And second of all, I feel like there's tons of things in life where you're like, God has given me a heart to do X, Y, Z, and I don't know how to do it. And the right reaction is, yes, indeed. Now you just need to shut up for a while. Like, you need to kind of stop plotting. If you feel like you can't think of anything, God may be suppressing it because whatever it is that you're thinking is stupid. And just hang. I mean, if you trust God, I feel like he'll handle this thing. And this was a six-month problem that I had that completely resolved itself if I just sat down and said, these are giving away today. What will God do? And he straight up did it. Anyway, that weird stuff you all were talking about reminded me of that story. I was pretty excited about it. Does that ever happen to anybody else? That only happens to me.
Well, I don't know how to follow up that story. I'm just going to sit here and be quiet and wait for the Lord to fix it.
All right.
Keep waiting.
Short of interesting dialogue.
Why don't you trust the Lord?
So here are the 27 ways. There's a New York Times article, 27 ways. 27 ways to be a modern man. And so I just want to see if you guys agree with these. And there's been some confusion on the net about whether these are legitimate items or not. So let's just take a look.
Is this where you like hold doors open for ladies and stuff?
I'm certain of it. It's got to have that.
No,
in there.
I don't think so. Yep. I don't think so. Wait, what did we call it though? The urban gentleman.
Urban gentleman.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's see if the New York Times modern man has any resemblance to an urban gentleman. That's probably the question of the day. All right, here we go. Being a modern man today is no different than it was a century ago. It's all about adhering to principle. Sure, fashion, technology, and architecture change over time, as do standards of etiquette, not to mention ways of carrying oneself in the public sphere. But the modern man will take the bits from the past that strike him as relevant and blend them with all the stuff of today. All right, here we go. Number one, when the modern man buys shoes for his spouse, he doesn't have to ask her sister for the size, and he knows which brands run, big or small.
What?
It's ridiculous.
That's knowing your wife's shoe size?
No, I mean, I can tell my wife, hey, go get me a 13, and it'll happen. My wife can try on seven shoes that are the same size. They may or may not fit. They're just different.
Yeah, here's the deal. I think it's a fool's parade to try to buy your wife shoes. Is that wrong? Is that unmanly and uncaring? Because I feel like that's just foolish.
Here's the deal. I just found out that the ladies' shoe sizes are not in the same place as mine. Like, it's on the side. It's not on the tongue where ours is.
Huh. I literally just found that out.
I know.
By you saying that. Like, I'm just
I thought you meant a different part
out.
Of the store.
No. Yeah, that's yeah, that's what blew me away.
You just figured that out?
I thought you were saying lady shoes were in a different section, too. Me
and the lady went to Goodwill date night, where, like, I got to go,
yes.
And, like the budget was $10, and yeah. I got to pick out her outfit, you know?
That's fun.
And I reserved my judgment based on what she got me. I'm like, if you make me look a fool, then I am prepared with one foolish outfit. If you do not make me look a fool, I have a very beautiful ensemble that I think you will look nice in. And so she went the fool route. But anyway, I'm looking at the shoes, right? I'm like, there are no sizes on these shoes. How do ladies even know? Is this some kind of, esteem thing where they don't want to tell the real size or something? You know, I'm like, stupid women's shoes. Well, it turns out it's on the side. It's like on the inside arch, and that's where they put it, not on the tongue. So heads up for dudes looking for shoes for ladies.
Thanks, Mike. I literally did not know that.
That's no problem.
So, so what's the thought then? Is that we feel like to be a modern man, this is unnecessary? Dave Herrick, did you have something?
I'm just astounded that a woman would actually let a man buy some sort of accessory or apparel for them. I mean, this sounds outrageous.
Yeah, the guy says, oh, that's a sandal. And the girl has like 12 different variations of,
right.
I'm like.
I mean, she might say, hey, can you get me a brown shoe? And the guy's going to come back with something very practical, but. It's nothing like what she wants.
I was corrected last month on the fact that black does not match everything.
Correct.
I feel that's like true. I'm not the right person to go out and buy shoes for my lady.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I would agree. I feel like this is unnecessary. I mean, it may be something, like if your dude were to show up with some kind of sweet shoe, I mean, he was right on. I'm sure that would be impressive at the time that he knows you that well. But I feel like of all the things that the modern man is failing to provide, the absence of him being able to pick out an appropriate shoe and size Would be low on my list of things to do to impress your lady.
Yes. Besides, isn't it usually kind of a therapeutic thing for women to go buy shoes? Exactly. I mean, that's enjoy that.
It would be nice, like if you had the ability, and this is an uncanny ability that I don't know that more than one man in this world possesses, to show up with a shoe that is the correct size and actually something that she likes. Like, if you could pull that off, that does have a lot of whiz bang to it. But I feel like, the odds are got to be astronomical that you're going to do this right.
I think this is a pretty good sign that we're archaic men.
Okay.
Either that or we're about
just
to
going by number one.
Yeah, we just don't get it. We are not a modern man.
I'm going to vote nay on that one, Ben. What, yeah. Number one, nay.
Okay. All right, okay. That's a no. All right,
we're traditional men. That's
number
fine.
Two, the modern man never lets other people know when his confidence has sunk. He acts as if everything is going swimmingly until it is. Is that the right posturing of the modern man?
Okay.
No.
Andrew's in?
Andrew says, yeah. I'm going to go with nay on that one as well.
No.
I think people are attracted to a guy who goes, you know what, things aren't going great.
Yeah.
So, people like that.
So he's only got two settings. Everything's fine, hunky-dory, and the planet is on fire. That's pretty much it?
Well, it sounds like it so far, yeah.
Okay.
Fake confidence until you make it? No, just be a dude.
All right.
Never net low when his confidence is sunk. Well, I mean, I don't know that you need to, you know, broadcast it for the world or anything.
No.
That doesn't mean
you, like, fake yourself out of it. Like, you don't lie to everybody about it. There's somebody you should confide in.
Yeah, I mean, you can confide in some community around you.
Yeah.
And be like, hey, man, this is a slow burning train, man. And we are not, things aren't going great. You got any ideas? People like that.
Here's the two conversations that could happen. I'm hanging out with Mike. Mike, I have no confidence. What should I do?
Well, it's probably deserved.
Exactly. The second conversation is, oh, man, I'm really confident about all this situation. I'm never going to seek any help, even though I definitely need it. How are you doing, Mike?
That's deserved. Hey, I can answer the same either way.
Hey, Philip, I could really use some help. I'm feeling low. Not now. I'm buying shoes.
Do you, by chance, know which sizes go big or small?
What sizes do your wife wear? We probably have the same size feet.
Okay, wait. So if we are to retitle, then, what is the urban gentleman act? If he doesn't act like that necessarily, if we were to retitle the appropriate name as the urban gentleman, what does the urban gentleman do?
I think he just acts honest.
Yeah,
and here, like, it's not as easy as most think, right? Because dudes will tend to overdo the situation, right? Like, I will be fine. You can find me doing this when I'm ill, when I have some type of small cold or cough season. I will sell it as if death itself has come to visit me.
Yeah,
and I won't realize that I'm doing it until I thought there was no reason to groan just there when I got up out of a chair. And I thought that was a bit of an oversell, you know? Like, people believe you're sick. You don't really have to pour it on like bad syrup, you know? Just kind of cough every once in a while. But we don't. Like, you know, dudes will, or like when they're mad, they'll posture mad. They'll puff up way big, you know? Like, and like they tend to do emotions not in an honest way. They have to almost make them up because they don't know. They think that if you just lived it out how it was, it would be too boring or not have the effect. And so they puff it up full of stuff that doesn't exist and make it outrageous. And so I think the urban gentleman just acts honestly, just has an honest representation of what's going on. I think that's respectable.
Yeah, the urban gentleman has confidence in Christ, but that doesn't mean he can't be, you know, honest with his community.
All right, that's the urban gentleman. All right,
but the modern man's a fake.
Yeah, he fakes it till he makes it.
Which is a ridiculous
thing. Wait, actually, so here's the deal. So the modern man then kind of screws the other modern man.
Yeah.
Because he acted like things are swimmingly and probably gives advice and counsel and things based upon as if things are great. But if things are not great, then maybe I should ignore your freaking advice because you're not very handy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know, it's a bit of a social media culture, right? Things are great. I should do the things they do because his life is good. But if the modern man, if I come up and try to tell my woes to my modern man friend and he's like, but things are great in my life, and I think, well, maybe I should be more like him. And I end up in the dumps like that guy. We're just both faking it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not urban.
You're just making more fake confidence happen in the world.
Yeah. The modern man is a bonehead.
Yep.
All right. Number
double lot. That's two, Ben. I'm a nay on number two as well.
Right, so number three.
Reasons we disagree with them.
From the New York Times, 27 ways to be a modern man. Number three, the modern man is considerate. At the movie theater, he won't munch down on a mouthful of popcorn during a quiet moment. He waits for some ruckus. I'm on board with that, actually.
Yeah, that's
reasonable. I'm totally on board with that.
Yeah.
Sure.
You won't stop me from eating my popcorn.
Wait, Dan, is the real barrier that you don't recognize a moment of consequence?
I like popcorn. I paid good money for that popcorn.
You're archaic, dude.
You paid $10 to get in a movie, and you basically stare at the popcorn.
Yeah, I could care less what the movie is. I'm like, hey, I need
best
more
hour and a half I've spent in the last month.
Dan, you
I want a ticket to the 7:15 popcorn show.
Hold on. Dan, you own an industrial popcorn machine.
I told you I like popcorn.
If there's anyone who can have popcorn at any time, it's you.
It's well used.
Like, hey, hon, do you want to go out and eat popcorn tonight, or should we stay in? Well, let's go out.
We've done that. We'll go to the theater, buy a popcorn, and not go watch a movie.
Actually, we were just at the movie theater last week, and the dude sells me like some kind of, jumbotron of popcorn, you know, and he's like, free refills. I said, are you kidding me? There's like 5 gallons of popcorn here. He goes, I said, do people actually come out and get a refill of this thing? He goes, that happens every once in a while when people buy it in a group. I said, well, I thought that was cheating. You know, like, you get 10 dudes that share a tarp of popcorn, and you give them free refills. He goes, yeah, it's a smart way to do it. Like, he was shaming me for
you idiot.
Yeah, so really, I guess thought there's no way anybody's coming out to refill this thing. It's like a trough.
But, most movies these days have, like, loud ruckus. They're, like, entirely loud ruckus things, and there's no quiet moments whatsoever, so it doesn't really matter.
Except for Twilight.
Do you evaluate movies by how much ruckus is going on? In the I like to eat my popcorn indiscriminately. Can you give me a ruckus movie?
I work next to a movie theater, so right. It's like half the movies out there are like, oh, that's going to blow something up or have a giant war or race some cars around.
Those are popcorn eating movies. Mm-hmm. I feel like Dan's nailed it.
Yeah, the only movie I've ever not eating popcorn at was The Passion of the Christ. And it was really weird. There was like one dude in the entire theater eating popcorn. It's like he's sitting there getting bloodied and you're like, oh, this is great. And you're eating your popcorn. It just didn't seem right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like chewing gum right before you take communion. Something feels weird.
Yeah,
about
you can't
it.
Like well,
it feels real weird.
What did I do that for?
It is kind of weird, like with The Passion of the Christ is like I think I usually watch it once a year and like it hits me when I'm gonna watch it. I feel like it's probably time to watch it, you know? But like I'll like five other times that year I'll be like, you know what I should watch? No, it's not time. Yeah. It's not time. Like, I just can't just put it in for a casual entertainment.
Let it build.
It just doesn't work that way.
Nobody ever says, hey, man, what's your favorite movie? You go, The Passion.
Yeah, The Passion.
That doesn't happen.
No, that's right. That's about the reaction. Yep. All right. So we're going to agree the modern man is considerate. The urban gentleman, we agree. Except for Dan.
He says, popcorn at any time. I'm sure my popcorn whatever I want.
Here we go. Number four. The modern man doesn't cut the fatty or charred bits off his filet. Every bite of steak is a privilege, and it all goes down the hatch.
Oh, I'm a loser.
Agreed.
I cut it all off.
Completely agreed.
No. Here's the deal. As an urban gentleman, I feel like I get to eat my meat however I darn well please. If I don't want to chew it, I don't have to, like, take one for the team and chew up some kind of fatty bunch of it.
No, you
just to be
to
like,
that.
I'm manly.
There's nothing manly about it. It's just delicious.
That's the thing, is the fat, that's where all the flavor is stored when it's really hot. It's just, if it gets cold, then you really don't want anywhere near it.
But a mouthful of fat,
That's what I'm saying.
But it's delicious when it's hot.
It's like chewing on a...
Cut off those pieces and then eat small pieces of that with the rest of the meat.
Seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, you're trying to...
Steak. It's supposed to be work.
Yeah, you're saying there's good parts of steak, and you're trying to convince your body that this nasty fat belongs with it.
Like, nasty fat is the best part.
No, man, I think I just flat out disagree, but I love that you do it. I don't think you can boss me on how to eat my steak. I think the urban gentleman has paid money for it, and how I choose to use that is how I choose to use it.
Okay, I agree with that. Fine. Urban gentleman does
go
what
eat the shell of the lobster, too, Mike.
What? Yeah, that's the same. Fatty part of the steak or the lobster shell.
Yep. Here's the thing. I eat the lobster however I want. I bought it.
I used to cut the fat away, and then I was off in the Middle East, and the guys took me grilling, and they'll put meat on skewers, the kebab style, and they'll intentionally put just these big chunks of fat right in between. And I thought, what are you doing? This is crazy. And they're like, no, trust us.
When we go to the Middle East together.
Yeah, they throw it on the grill. Pull it off, and the fat's all just, I mean, it is soft. I mean, it's just almost dripping. And so I grabbed the first piece of meat, and it's just, okay, it's delicious because, you know, that's how it is. And then when I get to that first piece of fat, I mean, it's like the flavor just was kicked up to, like, level 11. It was just absolutely delicious. So you've got to try the fat hot off the grill.
In the Middle East with a bunch of dudes.
Yes, absolutely.
Dave Harris' autobiography, Chapter 4, Chewing the Fat with a Bedouin. Okay. All right, so can we agree that the urban gentleman says you eat it how you please to eat it?
Yeah,
and
that's
if
fair.
You want to influence another urban gentleman to eat it differently. More power to you.
That's fair.
Okay, love it.
I'll agree to that.
We're in the 27 Ways to Be a Modern Man by the New York Times. So far, we're in a casual disagreement. Number five, the modern man won't blow 10 minutes of his life looking for the best parking spot. He finds a reasonable one and puts his car between the lines. I agree with that one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Urban gentleman does the same thing. He doesn't hunt.
No.
Okay.
He parks the car and gets to walk it.
Open.
Yeah. But legs are way more efficient in this area. I agree. Number six. Before the modern man heads off to bed, he makes sure his spouse's phone and his kids' electronic devices are charging for the night.
No.
That's their job.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I disagree. patently.
Hey, sweetheart, you're also an adult. Do you want to take care of your own phone? Yes.
Make sure your mind's charging.
Yeah, mine's got to be good.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah. I mean, actually, I take that back.
Jory's dead on the plug-in.
I'll check on my wife's, right? My wife just generally charges her own phone if she just got tired or forgot. You know, like, yeah, I can throw down on that. But, like, the children, I mean, come on, man. If you want, welcome to phone ownership. You got to plug that thing in. Because they'll go, I mean, they don't even have phones, right? They have old phones with, like, games on them, you know? And, yeah. And then they'll go somewhere and they're like, hey, can I borrow your phone, Dad? I'm like, no, you have my phone. You just didn't plug it in, so you have nothing to play. Well, that's not fair, they'll say. So what that tells me is that they're not grasping the concept of charging their own phone. Now, once they do it on a consistent basis and they just forget every once in a while, that's something different. But otherwise, you're enabling them to be lazy and not take care of their stuff.
Yeah, it's a good way to teach kids responsibility.
Yeah, plug in your own phone.
Besides that, half the time I can't even find my own charger.
Solid point. Urban gentleman may or may not be able to find his own charger. He worries about himself. Maybe takes care. At least checks in on his wife. Teaches the kids responsibility by not plugging it in.
Now, see, a true urban gentleman orders like a 6-pack of cords as soon as the family gets phones.
Oh, that's what I do.
And then shows up with like, here's three, and then puts them into cards without telling anybody. Be like, yeah, there's one in your glove box. Love. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
Urban gentleman.
I agree. Yep. That's the move. Urban gentleman. Here we go. Number seven. 27 ways to be a modern man for the New York Times. The modern man buys only regular colas like Coke or Dr. Pepper. If you walk into his house looking for a Mountain Dew, he'll show you the door.
Yikes, man.
What?
Tough times.
I'm a Diet Coke guy.
I'm with him. Yep.
Why do they hate Mountain Dew?
Here's the deal. Mountain Dew in a can tastes like gristle. Cold gristle.
Which, by the way, I like.
Cold steak gristle.
Drinking gristle with a Bedouin in Chapter 5.
Now, if you can find
Mike
Mountain Dew.
You're not my friend anymore.
You can find.
That's it. We're done.
If you can find Mountain Dew in a 20-ounce bottle, you, sir, have tasted the slice of heaven that the Lord has allowed on this earth. But you try to drink it out of a can? No.
This is unnecessarily restrictive?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bring your own stuff if you want your own stuff. That's
it doesn't say anything about a modern gentleman bringing his own cola. You got to get it from the guy's place. You
know, you're not going to find any sort of soda at my house, no.
Now I've molded the Dr. Pepper.
I wouldn't call Dr. Pepper regular cola. Dr. Pepper is like a combination of all the leftover batch of all other colas.
Yeah.
You just dump it all in
three individual flavors.
It's a manly drink.
Yeah.
I'm going to agree with this one.
Yeah, yep. Man.
Yeah.
Pepper got his doctorate.
Number eight, the modern man uses the proper names for things. For example, he'll say helicopter, not chopper, like some gauche simpleton. Here come the wheelie bird. Here's the deal. I like the phrase gauche simpleton. I feel like I'm an urban gentleman says that.
I don't understand this distinction.
Wait. So I'm trying to think of...
unless he's deliberately...
Is there anything that comes to mind personally, fellas, that you use the little children's word?
I mean, I say car instead of sedan or something.
I don't remember the last time I said, hey, would you like to ride in my automobile?
Yeah, I say wheels.
I only do that when I'm like joking. Like, let's take the motorbike for a spin. I mean.
You gauche simpleton. I mean, there is something classy about using the right words, but I mean, people got to understand what you're saying. And so, I mean, I mean, chopper might be a little fifth grade, but.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a pointed.
I mean, that's kind of weird if an adult just goes, "Hey, man, do you want to go take a ride on a chopper?"
Yeah. I didn't know you owned one.
I'm trying to think of another. Like, what's another example of something that you may use a more childish word for, besides like wheels, besides cars?
Well, I mean, staying in the same vein, would you say something like, "Hey, do you want to go to the races?" And instead, you should say, "Hey, would you like to go to the sporting event?" I don't know.
Technically, the word fridge is out.
How about pig? How about like
you say fridge instead of refrigerator?
Yeah, say refrigerator.
Nah, this is stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is really dumb.
Hey, here's the deal. The modern man does not waste his time on this conversation.
Yeah. Urban gentleman doesn't give a crap. He's going to talk the way he'd like to as long as he doesn't sound like an idiot.
Yeah. I'm going to give this a half point for Gail Simpleton. Yeah. I feel like that's something where the urban gentleman could up his game and use and say things like that.
Yeah, you could find more colorful words. That doesn't mean you have to eliminate fridge and chopper.
Yeah, all right, I'm in with that. All right, here we go. Number 9. Having a daughter makes the modern man more of a complete person. He learns new stuff every day.
I mean, having sons is completely out.
Here's the deal.
That's all I know.
I think the urban gentleman recognizes all the new stuff that he learns by having a daughter in his life. I think that's and gladly embraces such a thing.
True.
I think it would otherwise be wrong to say that you can't be a modern man or an urban gentleman if you do not have a daughter. That seems a little bit close-minded. But other than that, I would say recognizing the richness of your life based upon having a daughter in your life, if you want to be that specific, something an urban gentleman should certainly know.
Yeah, and I feel if you put the weight of completing yourself on your child, that's a lot of weight for a small little girl to handle.
You complete me.
I mean, the rest of y'all got daughters, right? But, like, I mean, what I learned most from these little gals is, boy, it's tough being a little gal. There's some stuff. You know, there's stuff going on other little gals about. The way they look at themselves, the way they feel about themselves, the way they fit in socially, the way that, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think, man, it's just easier to be a callous simpleton. It just really is. When I was 5 years old, I'm like, chopper, 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 chopper. You know, and she's like, does my hair look right? And so-and-so has blah, blah, blah. I'm like, man, what a tough day. I don't know how you guys live like this.
Yeah, take everything you're thinking about on a given day and double it and actually be concerned about it as opposed to just thing that passes in your mind.
Yeah, and then quadruple that, and that's your wife. You, sir, are surrounded by a bunch of thinkers.
Yeah.
Where you walk in, you go, a little cold in here. Maybe I'll put on a sweatshirt.
Yeah, right.
Everyone else is like, a little cold in here. Did I leave the oven on? What happened? Maybe I should do some laundry. I bet the kids need sweatshirts. We should probably clean the sweatshirts for the kids. 15,000 other things.
And each of those is a reflection of yourself.
That's exactly
who
right.
Who you are and how important you are.
And the dad goes, I wonder if I got any sweatshirts. I bet I got one in the old truck.
Maybe it stinks. Maybe I don't care.
Yeah. Where's the dog? He's to blame.
That gauche shibboleth.
You don't see me shedding in here. I barely ask anything of you.
I thought I trained you to shed outside.
I'm amazed at the amount of responsibility I put on my dog. Every day I walk in and I think, I ask barely anything of you. And you can't even do this one thing, like stop eating my underpants.
Wait. Did the dog gets in your underpants door?
No, it gets out of the dirty clothes.
Oh, yeah.
I've tried to hide them in the sink. Here's the deal. When you have to hide your own underpants because the dog might eat them, you think to yourself, what series of life choices have I made that have landed me in this predicament?
No, I had that same thought when we were leaving the house one day, and my wife goes, we should put the garbage can up because the dog's going to get into it. I'm like, why am I working on behalf of the dog?
Yeah.
Like, the dog has inconvenienced me to the extent that I have to pick up my garbage and stick it on top of my counter where I serve food because it can't behave itself. And so I thought, like, I don't know. I've made wrong choices in life, right?
Yeah.
At some point, I've done something wrong where I have to act this way, and my dog...
You're in debt to an animal.
I know. He's bullying me around. If you don't move it, he's going to eat garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe I just put something in there and make him sick.
What happens, right? Like, you don't come home soon enough, I'm going to poop in here. Well, what the heck? Like, I feed you, I give you a place to stay, I pay you all the time, you keep me up every time it rains, and then you threaten me like, hey, show up every 6 hours or I'm going to crap in your yard, and then I'm going to come in and do it in the kitchen.
Right, like, what if I took off bits of my skin and left it around your place all the time? Like, that's unacceptable behavior, but that's basically what the dog is doing, putting his hair all over everywhere. Thinks he belongs to sit on all the stuff you got. Hey, you get a new shirt? I'm going to put my butt on that.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I don't want a dog anymore.
He's a bully, man.
Yeah, he is.
They're not nice.
All right, here we go. Number 10. The modern man makes sure the dishes on the rack have dried completely before putting them away.
I mean, can you wipe them with a towel? Is that acceptable?
Yeah, I don't think it implies he has to let it air dry.
You're supposed to put them away?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't remember the last time I put my dishes away. I kind of just let them clean and sit in the dishwasher, and then I grab them.
And then you pick them out. Do you have enough dishes to do multiple rotations through the dishwasher?
No.
So you just use this cupboard, really, as a wet cupboard?
For the most part, yes. Because here's the deal. I will use the dishes, put them in the dishwasher, wash them, and then use them out of the dishwasher, put them back in the dishwasher, and then use them.
Why don't you just get paper plates?
You can do that when you're single. You just
true.
Can't do that when you start doing...
Yeah.
Here's
it's clean, There's no problem with it.
Here's the right answer. I think what it's getting at is to say the urban gentleman does things the right way. He doesn't just do them because for the accolades to say the urban gentleman's gotten involved in this. He does it correctly, right? Just like when he takes care of the laundry, he doesn't just, and I'm guilty of this at times, put his undies away and the socks and then hang up his shirts and be like, okay, I took care of my action. I don't know where everything else goes.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not the urban gentleman. Urban gentleman figures out where stuff goes. Now, you can rightly task the children to put their own stuff away as a responsibility item. But, like, my wife has random piles of stuff that aren't labeled well. Or, like, she knows exactly where they go. I don't. And there's probably most of the time I'm like, I'm just going to leave these here, and she'll set them in the right spot. No troubles. And I thought, that's dumb. So I've been trying to make a stab at it. I'd rather be made a shot at it and be wrong than kind of bow out and be like, yeah, but I'm just a dude, and I don't know where clothes go. So, yeah, I say the urban gentleman doesn't bail on putting the laundry away in all areas. And if he doesn't know where a certain towel goes or whatever, you ask and figure it out so that you know it for next time, not be like, well, I'm just a lonely fella. I don't know where these go.
Hey, man, you need to simplify your household if there's certain places for certain towels.
We have three. There's
the, it was just towels.
Well, no, there's the kitchen towels that got degrees on them.
Yep.
And then there's man towels that also got degrees on them because I put it there from my body. And then there's the ladies' towels.
First off, don't use body from, in that from way. From that's body. You're doing another Rodan shower thing.
I put some man grease on it.
That's weird. This is another Rodan shower situation.
We have a separate towel pile for the pig. He gets its own.
All right, that's another different situation. You guys have a pet pig. Yep. I'm talking like, what's a kitchen towel?
The things you use to wipe dishes off when they're wet.
Yeah.
Yep.
They're just dry in the dishwasher. That's why they sit on racks.
Yeah, but what if you spill
so that the water walks off?
What if you wash your hands in the kitchen and you got to dry your hands off? You don't want to use a dirty towel that the pig just got done using.
First off, you have clothes on.
And here's the deal: you can't even trust the pig to put his own towel away.
Use your paper towel.
Oh,
it's the concept of paper towel.
Paper. Here's the deal: you take the amount of paper towels you use at your house and then multiply that by 20, and that's how many you will use in a full size family house. You will run through paper towels like you're just taking them outside
right.
and chucking them.
Right. You had three ladies, two dogs, two cats, and a pig, which is basically Mike's situation.
Yeah.
A couple goats.
You might as well just open the paper towels and dump them right into the garbage can.
Yeah. Just have a daily fire of paper towels where you just throw them in a big, big bonfire.
How do you heat your house? Paper towel. Brony. Yeah. Brony heats the house.
Sometimes I burn $20 bills the same way. That's just what it feels like. Right. Hey, we need this. Burn the money.
All right. We're going to do one more. Maybe we'll pick up on the rest of this one next week. So the modern man has never pinned a tweet, and he never will.
I don't even know what pinning a tweet is.
I'm not sure. It's not the same. It's not the same thing as the favorite, isn't it? I think it's like putting a specific one at the top so everyone sees that one.
I was gonna say it's not retweeting it and it's not favoriting it.
No, I don't.
Isn't it Pinterest when you pin something?
Well, that is Pinterest, yeah. But I think you can pin on Twitter too. Twitter. Oh.
Twitter's on the way out, so I don't know.
Hey, it doesn't sound like we have any problems here.
No, I think it's fine.
We don't even understand it.
We're all urban gentlemen.
All right, we're making some progress here. We're going to get...
I'm half a man.
Maybe we'll get some of those next week. We'll continue to list of the 27 ways to be a modern man, or the disagreement in which we reverse it and say the 27 ways to be an urban gentleman from Live from the Path. Hey, you listen to Live from the Path. Big thanks, by the way, to Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower team. Go to EisenhowerTeam.com or call Bob at 515-979-2883. For all your home buying and selling needs, if I ran a couple people today who potentially need a realtor, and I said, I know a man for you. Bob Eisenhower is legitimately the dude. He does a great job. His company, I don't know, they're fast, they're efficient, they're extremely helpful in finding the property that you need, or if you're just looking to sell your place and getting the right price on it and finding the right buyer. Because here's the deal: you could have it priced right and not get it from the right people, or maybe you the right people are looking at it, but they're put off by your price. You need the right combination, and Bob and his team just know that. So go to EisenhowerTeam.com, or like I said, call Bob at 515-979-2883, and he'd be the guy to help you out with that. And big thanks for him and his group for sponsoring Live from the Path. We would not be on the radio without it, so thanks to him.
Hey, did you know there's a concert next week? Well, I guess it's this Sunday.
It's Sunday, yeah. Mm-hmm. So Plum's at – so it's in Earlham, but it's not at the church, though. It's at the
right.
At school.
The high school in Earlham.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So you can still pick up tickets if you go to overflowmusic.com.
It's com or org or something. They'll have Plum somewhere
just
on
put
there.
The Google on Overflow Music.
Yeah. Overflow Music and Plum, and those tickets will come up. There's still a few left, so they still got – you got time to get in there and pick some up. Mm-hmm.
The urban gentleman would have bought his tickets by now.
Yeah, that's true. And here, there's still time to salvage this problem of yours, which is you are plumless. And so, pick up. That's going to be a really cool show. And here's the deal. It's like cool shows stop coming around when we don't support them. So if the person says, hey, I don't know why cool shows don't come, if you're not going out to them, you can't be surprised when artists who need that money for the show to actually, you know, make a living, don't keep coming around here. And so the folks at Overflow work hard at getting good shows in here, and they've done a really good job. They, they're the ones that brought in the Building 429 show with Tim Timmons and Rhett Walker Band.
Oh, yeah.
That we were at a few years ago. It was an excellent show.
Changed my world.
Yeah. So, like, those guys are working hard to get good shows for you. You need to respond and go out to that scene. So pick up those tickets for Plum. That's this coming Sunday. And go to Overflow Music or just do a Google search for Overflow Music and Plum. And you'll be able to pick up tickets for that. That should be a really, really good show.
That's tomorrow for our radio broadcast.
Yeah, heck yeah. If you guys are listening on the Truth Network 99.3 FM, there's still time. Okay, yep. It's Saturday night. You still got time to pick up tickets for Sunday night. Surprise your significant other or that modern man in your life who really enjoys that type of thing. Dry the dishes, pick him up. Make sure he's not buying shoes and take him out to the Plum concert. All right, so there's an article that scientists claim zapping brains with magnets can treat belief in God. Here's how it goes. Oh, wait, they're combined. So it says, wait, attitudes towards, here the full headline is, scientists claim they can change your belief on immigrants and God with magnets.
On immigrants?
On immigrants and God with magnets. So you can see what this implies already.
How do they know my belief on immigrants?
I don't know. Here's what the study says.
Is this only for Americans, or?
Not sure on that. Let's see where it comes from.
Are they reading my mind?
Wait, attitude toward God and immigrants? Are these a natural pair? The newspaper thought so. They tell of an experiment which claims to be able to make Christians no longer believe in God and make Britons open their arms to migrants. It's English. It's an English study.
Oh.
How's it done? Using a technique called transcranial magnetic stimulation, researchers can safely shut down certain groups of neurons in the brain. It seems to have worked. Volunteers were coaxed into having their brains zapped by giant magnets. And lo, belief in God was reduced almost by a third, while participants became 28.5% less bothered by immigration numbers. The news report was based on the paper Neuromodulation of Group Prejudice and Religious Belief by Colin Holbrook and four others in the journal Social, Cognitive, and Affective Neuroscience. This paper is one in a long line of studies that purport to explain the workings of the human mind based on responses to simple questionnaires. It's true, scientists in some fields have convinced themselves they can quantify the unquantifiable. They believe hideously complex human emotions can be adequately represented on scales of 1 to 5 or some other bounds. For instance, on a scale of negative 4 to 4, how much do you agree with the statement, there exists an all-powerful, all-knowing, loving God? Before you answer, consider, is the distance in belief from 3 to 4 the same as it is from 2 to 3 and from 1 to 2 and so on? Are these distances exactly the same in all people? What happens if the scale were to be changed from negative 4 to 4 to 1 from 1 to 9, which is the same length? Would the results be the same? Does everybody agree on the precise definitions of all-powerful, all-knowing, and so on? The answer is obviously no to all these questions, but Holbrook's results and the results from thousands of such investigations assume the answer is yes. It's worse than this. Consider the same question about God, but after you answer these two questions. Please briefly describe the emotions that the thought of your own death arouses in you, and please jot down, as specifically as you can, what you think will happen to your body as you physically die and once you are physically dead. Why? Because the authors say, in the supplementary material to the main article, these threat inductions have an evident link between the prospect of death and palliative thoughts of God in the afterlife, and also because thinking about your own death has been shown to reliably heighten both intergroup prejudice and religiosity in prior studies. Thinking about life after death increases intergroup prejudices? That must explain the riot in the pews each Sunday after the Nicene Creed is read. I look for the resurrection of the dead and the life of the world to come. And are palliative thoughts about death the only reason people believe in God? Of course not. The presidential prompting is of dubious value. So here's what I'm thinking. They're looking to say, first of all, they've indicated that your belief in acceptance of migrants in whatever form and belief in God are obviously diseases that need cured. They're going to do the thing with magnets. And the way you do that is you ask them the questions, you zap them with the magnets, and then you ask them for the reactions. Now, if you were to ask me about my quality of life before you try to zap me with a giant magnet, and then you put me through some sort of situation of which I felt, you know, isolated in a room, knowing that I'm undergoing some kind of weird magnetic thing, and then ask me my quality of life, I feel like, and belief in God, I feel like those are easily swayed by the nature of the experiment itself, and my expectations as to what you want to hear from my reaction to that experiment. Because, like, I can't think of anything like that would obviously alter what I believe in God, or, I suppose, immigrants. That's a weird study.
Didn't they seem that the connection seemed to be fear-based in some way or another? It's like somehow these magnets will reduce a person's fear. And so for those people who respond to immigrants and apparently to God because of the fear that's going on in their brains, then by somehow shutting down the fear, cause them to be less interested in these things?
Does that ring true?
Is that? It seemed like that was the summary of what they were going for.
It was what it seems to be saying. Here's
but the same effect can occur from a lobotomy. I mean, you can pacify someone very
quickly.
Exactly
what I was thinking.
So, you know, what's the value here?
Well, that's the thing, is that you've basically said, hey, listen, the person's belief in God is so strong that regular old talking ain't going to do it. We literally have to magnetize your head and convince your brain that something else is going on here. This is not even a legit study. Here's the deal. I could basically say, hey, look, do you believe in purple angels? And someone says, no. And then I hit him with a bat in the face. How about now? No. And then I do it again. And then they go, yeah, because they want to stop getting hit in the face with a bat.
Actually, that's the right thought is that what people, it assumes that the belief in God and the, anti-immigrants position is the wrong one, and that magnets are improving the situation. But, that is an unscientific deduction. If a right understanding of science would be to say, what does this do to people's belief?
Yeah.
And then it would be, from an outsider's perspective, for us to determine whether it is actually beneficial. Because, if God is who he says he is, and science cannot prove, disprove that, okay, what you might have done is actually just harmed someone as opposed to improve their circumstances.
Did it happen to say whether there was any atheists in there or something that they magnetized, and now they then believed in the Lord? Because really, if that's not true, then you haven't proven anything.
And was there a group that they didn't magnetize? You know, what do they call that? The
control?
The control group?
The control group, yeah, that they thought they magnetized, but they really didn't.
The placebo magnetizing.
They sent a big guy out in a big magnet costume. Do you feel different?
Magnet.
Zip, zip, zippy. Zip, 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 zip. I know magnets don't zap. I don't know what
The urban gentleman.
I gotta stop buying magnets
next to the guy.
Did you feel that?
Is it done?
I think so.
The urban gentleman still refers to it as the dipole.
This magnet I brought is acting funny. That's a bug zapper. you were sold the wrong item.
Your batteries are low. You mean my dry cells.
Here's the thing, though.
Where's my electrolyte?
I've been zapped by magnets before, and my belief in God only increased. So.
Wait, I was going to say, what happens to everybody that has an MRI?
Yeah.
They go in there, they come back out, they're like, I've seen it.
I was going down a tunnel.
Actually, they didn't show up for the study because they got stuck in their metal bed. Yeah. They can't get back out.
Exactly.
It said, let's see, we still haven't answered the big question, why? Why do the authors design a study about belief in God and attitudes about immigrants? From their conclusion, written in the impenetrable prose typical of such studies, here's their explanation. History teaches that investment in cherished group and religious values can bring forth acts of both heroic valor and horrific injustice. Understanding the psychological and biological determinants of increases in ideological commitment may ultimately help us to identify the situational triggers of and individuals most susceptible to this phenomenon, and thereby gain some leverage over the zealous acts that follow. The results provide evidence that relatively abstract personal and social attitudes are susceptible to targeted neuromodulation, opening the ways for researchers to not only describe the biological mechanisms undergirding high-level attitudes and beliefs, but also to establish causality via experimental intervention. So I think the thought process here is that if you can find the right place to zap it, you can keep the shoe bomber off the plane.
But the problem is, if it's based on... If this is people who are responding to God because of the fear in their life, and they're afraid of death and afraid of immigrants and things like that, you're not talking about suicide bombers. Okay, you're not talking about those kind of zealotry.
Yeah.
I mean, they've already made peace with whatever kind of death scenario and fear is going on. They're already completely embraced and sold in it. They're not...
Right. You're right. This is affecting a whitewashed Freddy. Some guy who's got no firm beliefs one way or the other and can be easily swayed by the circumstances to believe something different.
Yeah.
You're right. Shoebomber ain't being convinced one or the other.
It's not the radicals out there. These are the nominals.
Yeah, so we're talking like a deadbolt on your door, right? You're going to keep an honest man out. Somebody want to come in, coming in.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, that's tricky. All right, anyway. So, I mean, heads up for a guy with a magnet?
I don't know. When you started reading their explanation, I caught on for about the first half a second. And then all of a sudden, I just felt like you put my hand in a waffle iron, and I had to wait it out. And I can't follow anything of what you're saying. It sounds like a lot of blah, 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 waffle iron.
there's a lot of subjective guesswork going on in this study, to put it mildly.
Here's the deal. We hit people with magnets, and they changed their mind. I'm not sure whether they thought we were going to do it again or...
It sounds like a couple dudes found out that magnets can zap people, and they're like, hey, man, we should do a study about this, and I zap people in the face.
I mean, here's the deal.
And figure out how to make it about God and immigrants.
You're next to magnets all the time. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, when they say magnet... Everyone thinks of like this super powerful magnet or whatever. It's going to suck you in or change your brain waves. But like you hold a magnet to your phone, to your ear every day.
That's true.
You stand by a TV with 15 magnets in it. Your car has 45 magnets in it. You're around magnets all the time. I don't know that this one magnet, this special magnet that they brought in from Berlin or something, is going to do some whatever fancy. Yeah. We're not a magnetic being, right? Like the whole Earth runs on a magnetic pulse, true. But like it's not like you have an inner gyroscope, right? The Lord was a little bit more sophisticated than that. And so it's all a placebo, man. It's not really doing anything.
Yeah, I wonder. It makes you wonder, like, what they tell people ahead of time. Like, yeah. Do we just say, hey, I'm going to ask you a few questions, then you're going to sit alone for a while, and then I'm going to ask you the same questions again, and what happened? Or we say, hey, we're going to subject you to magnetism, and we're trying to figure out if it changes what you think about God. Go.
Well, if you're going to zap people in the face, shouldn't you probably get a waiver?
What are these people doing making experiments? Why not? Oh, we've got a giant magnet. Let's make a magnet suit. Be Iron Man for, like, couple days.
That's true. Andrew's made a solid case that they're using any knowledge that they may have improperly.
Yeah.
And for the wrong means.
Okay. Okay, I agree with Andrew.
We could have been curing sleepwalking years ago.
All right. You're listening live from the path. Mike, we got like 5-6 minutes on the regular broadcast. You got time for your advice?
Here's the deal. It's not really long and drawn out. I can't even figure out. I don't even know why it's still bothering me. But the deal is I have a vehicle. It's an older vehicle. And I let somebody borrow this vehicle. And
is that someone in the room?
No.
Okay.
No, I have a lot of older, crappy vehicles here.
Okay.
So anyway, I let somebody borrow this thing, and it broke down on them. And I kind of thought maybe that might happen. It's got like 200,000 miles on it, right? But in either case, I felt like a schmuck. So he said, this happened. So I go rolling out there, and I looked at the two possible things that I thought could be wrong. And one was the most expensive part, but really easy to get to. And the other one was a pretty cheap part, but kind of a pain to get to. And I thought, man, it's nice outside. And I always end up getting bit by the worst thing. So I'm going to buy the most expensive part and assume that that was probably the deal. So I put this thing in. I drive it around for like a half hour, 45 minutes. Works just fine. I say, look, we're good to go. I'm sorry. It was only down for like 24 hours. I got it back to him. I said, there you go. I'm sorry that happened. You know, let me know if you have any more problems. He drives it like for 15 minutes. It does the exact same thing. Starts breaking down on him again. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So then I get it dumped off at a neighbor's house or whatever. He gets his vehicle back up and running and gets it back, you know. And so I'm like, well, I'm going to have to go pick up this thing. And I live about 45 minutes away from where it's at. Preparing for a 3-hour commute of where it breaks down 5 times and I got to wait for it to reset and all this jazz. I get out there, get in it, and I drive it straight home. No problems at all. And it occurred to me that I was legitimately upset by the time I got home. Because what's bothering me more than anything is I don't know why it's breaking down. And the whole goal of me driving it was that I would be there when it happened and I would know what happened and then I could fix it, you know? And I thought, the whole time I'm driving it back to my house, I'm like, it's working. Why isn't it breaking down? And I thought, maybe the Lord is blessing me with a sweet drive home. And I thought, why would you do that? I need to know what's wrong with this thing, you know? And then so now I'm caught in a really weird dichotomy that for some reason I cannot drop. I've been thinking about it for like the last 2 days. I want nothing more than this to fail. And I have a feeling that God wants nothing more than for it to succeed without letting me see how it fails. And for some reason, I can't get past this scenario on why this means anything to me. But it's still bothering me. It's still sitting in the back of my head like, I don't understand. I want something to fail so I can figure out what the problem is. God says, it's going to run. Now, granted, he might not have done any of these things. It might just be a luck of the thing, and whatever the screw that was causing the short isn't in there anymore, and it moved because of the heat. I don't know. I can't prove any of these things. But I really want to know why it doesn't work. And as far as I'm concerned, the Lord is saying, no, you don't need to know that at all. And all I can think of is, but it's unreliable. I don't know why. I can't loan it to people. I can't drive it. I don't know what's wrong with it. I can't fix it. And for some reason, I feel like God is refusing to reveal to me what the problem is. Now, here's the question. Why? Tell me why. It's driving me crazy. You guys have insight.
So are you proposing that we answer the question that God is not?
Tell me why he's doing this.
God refuses to tell me what you guys know.
I'm confused and I don't understand. I need to know why this is happening.
All right. What would you do with a reliable vehicle? I'm sorry, an unreliable vehicle.
I would have to get rid of it.
Is that what you're going to do with this?
If I can't, if it doesn't break down again, then yes. I can't loan it to anybody if I don't know if it runs. If it's unreliable, I can drive it because I don't mind getting stranded on the road in my own vehicle. But having someone else stranded on the road in my vehicle, I feel terrible. I can't do it.
So you're going to drive it around?
Well, I have a lot of unreliable vehicles to drive. Okay. This one I could probably shed.
I don't need extra options.
I don't need more. But I can't. But like literally, I only keep this car around to let people borrow it when their car breaks down. That's the only reason I keep it. And so, but I, if I don't, if it doesn't break down, I can't figure out what's wrong with it. And every time I drive it, it's just fine.
I don't know. Maybe the Lord is setting you up. You're going to be driving it some way. It's going to break down at the right time. And A, well, you know what it is. And you will have broken down for the right reasons. Hey, so you're thinking about this all wrong. You're like, God, why don't you just tell me what this is? Why can't I figure this out? And really, what you got to think is, I wonder what God's doing here. It's going to be awesome. He's setting me up for something. It's possible.
This sounds reminiscent of Ben's issue of he's been sitting on this thing for a long time, and then he just suddenly just says, all right, God, here, it's yours. And then God solves it in like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
I think that's what's going
to
happen.
But he has to use me to do it. That's how I've set it up.
you're just putting God in a box then, aren't
that's
you?
That's what I'm saying. This is the problem. This is... I feel like he's...
And Aaron prayed to the Lord God, and he said, give me a sword. I will free the people from Egypt. This is how it will be done.
We've tried it with your ways, with the bugs and the frogs. Okay. I'm just going to go get them, okay? Anyway, it's not even really Pope-style advice. I just, for the life of me, can't figure out why I'm still thinking about it. This thing is of no consequence to me.
I think he's given you a safe way to recognize that you need to give up on some stuff, right? A safe way to look at it and say... I care. I need to know more than I should need to know. Maybe it's for me. Maybe the reason you're telling this story is for me because I feel like this has been hitting me over the head multiple times over the last month, which has got a hammer on me saying, you don't get to know. It's not your business. What comes next is not your problem. Well, all the planning, the preparation, the skills you think you have, the things that you think are going to go on, the indicators of what you use to decide whether things are going well or not well, he goes, those are not your concern. It's taking the things that we say, which is faithful means God will handle the ends, and actually believing that on a micro level. As opposed, like sometimes we retranslate the means to be like everything up to the point of which we break through the banner at the start of the football game. We plot it out where the uniforms go, we plot it out with the tunnel we're going to run in, we coordinate with the announcer on who's the first guy out, that kind of stuff. And we're like, I've been faithful in all these means. God will supply the ends, right? Like, we've actually taken control of everything that would allow the ends to be anything else but what we dictated. But the truth is, if I'm going to say that God will handle the ends, I have to have not taken all the means from him as well, right? Mm-hmm. And so, faithful in the means that are mine, and otherwise saying, for God to have done something, I need to actually let him do it. And that is showing up for me in multiple ways over the last month or so. I think it shines in that example, like, If you can't get it to break, this is another example with your car, with a car of yours. So I've been driving your junk box truck this week.
Yeah.
And so like Mike's got a tail light out in this thing. The back tire goes flat like every 12 hours. So I have to kind of amp it up, stop at a gas station before I go from work and back to work.
Seatbelt.
The seatbelt does not work. So I've got it kind of tied and rigged up.
No, hold on. It takes 5 pulls and you have to hit it when you pull it out.
So I got it tied there. That way, if the sheriff passes me, he can at least see it crossing over my shoulder so he doesn't pull me over for lack of a belt.
You just don't know how to do it right.
and then I can't get the glove box open because I was preparing to get pulled over for the taillight, and I couldn't get the glove box open. So I thought, the cop's going to pull me over. I'm going to have no documentation, no seatbelt, no taillight, a flat tire, and be like, my brother owns this truck. And I thought, well, there's no way he's not going to search the thing. So and he's going to find the no-bake cookies I stashed in there. So, but so anyway, I've been worried all week. Like, I'm going to get pulled over. It's going to cost me big money. I don't have big money to pay this stupid fine. And then Dave Herrick tried to talk me out of this yesterday, and I refused to be talked out of it. I was still nervous and thinking about it. Like, it's going to cost me big money, and Mike's a real jerk, and doggone it, I'm going to be in some big, big troubles. And then finally, as I was driving here today, I thought, like, I suddenly became not worried about it at all. And, like, if they pull me over, they pull me over. Like, I have to drive the vehicle from point A to point B. I'm not going to wizardry myself outside of the police's arm. Like, if he's sitting somewhere and going to get me, he's going to get me. I have no other alternatives. So I might as well just drive to where I need to go at a normal speed, how I would have traveled normally, and things will just be what they'll be. And it was a much more peaceful ride driving that truck in today than it was before. And, like, the whole deal was I was constantly worried about something that I had very little control over, right? Like, I couldn't do anything about whether the sheriff was going to be posted one way or the other. I was legitimately breaking the law in some way or another. I'm not a nefarious criminal, but there's certainly a violation or two he could get me for, and I deserved it. And so I thought, it's just a rehammering to say, no, seriously, I'm asking for more and more. You need to trust me with more and more. Quit fighting it back for me. And so your other car trouble may also be for me. I'm very sorry. Heads up, fellas. The Lord is working on me, and you might be involved.
It's all right. I got lots of vehicles, Lord. Get them. Get Ben.
Hey, don't do that to me. All right. Hey, you've been listening to Live from the Path. Hey, thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you're on the Truth Network, 99.3 FM, we've got to let you go. And we're going to send you out to the mighty stylings of Thunder Chicken by the Mighty Imperials from the 2001 album. Hey, big thanks to Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower Team. Go to EisenhowerTeam.com for all your home buying and selling needs. If you're on the podcast, we will be right back with you. Please, in the meantime, be faithful to me, and God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path. This tune was on. Like, I turned it on, and this tune was kind of rocking. And so I cranked it up, and I was digging on it. And then all of a sudden, this guy gets on there, and I don't know who he is or what show he runs, but he kicks off some sort of, like, I don't know, Mexican greatest hits right after it. And so, like they were completely divergent.
This sounds like the student-run Drake station or something.
Something like that. We're okay. Like, yeah, these two things did not go to... I thought I was going to get in some kind of hip blues jazz funk action.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, finally, the radio is made for me. And then it kicks off. And I listened to it for a while. But, like, I can't trust music that doesn't have a legit bass player. When I like the tuba. But, like, I like a bass man. And so, if there's not a bass... If they said, hey, bass man, you don't have to come today. We brought in tuba man. I'm immediately irritated by this, and I can't enjoy your music. So marching bands are out unless they also have a bass man. As a matter of fact, I played in the marching band as an electric bass player. I drug an amplifier out to the front of the field. We plugged that beast in, and I played electric bass on the field. And so I don't trust it when you try to swap out the bass man, and so I had to turn the station. But anyway, that song was a good song. That was Thunder Chicken by the Imperials. All right, Mike, what do you got, Dear Life from the Path? Excellent. What else?
I'm looking.
I hear what you're saying.
Okay, here we go. Dear.
I saw the internet.
The internet's going slow. Dear Life from the Path, I have been dating Colton for 6 months. He's a year and a half older than I am and just started college. I'm still in high school.
Recently, my parents have begun putting restrictions on us, limiting us to one date a week, under 4 hours long, and in a group situation. They like Colton, but they're worried I'll miss out on my friends and high school events. We have obeyed their restrictions, but the time limit they have set is too short for many date activities, and getting a group together is nearly impossible. I agree I should balance my time, but I think their rules are too rigid because there are no exceptions. I know my parents care about me, but I'm looking for a little more freedom and the ability to make my own choices. My parents agreed that if I could find other people who thought this situation was in some way unreasonable, they would reconsider some of the rules. So I'm wondering what your opinion is, fellas.
4 hours sounds reasonable. You can hit a movie and a dinner. What's wrong with that?
What about mini-golf?
Well, you could do that instead of the movie.
Unless you get stuck behind a really big family that's super slow.
That's what I'm talking about. It happens every time you go mini-golfing. All of a sudden, like a megabus shows up, and one dude decides he's going to take 15 people out.
I haven't seen anybody be able to keep a mini-golf thing open. I feel like mini-golf's on the way out. Or it's out. Although, right for a resurgence. Do you guys want to open a mini-golf place?
Yes, please. Yeah. Although... Can we have a mini bowling in the way, too? Just have a bowling alley, but with, a windmill?
No, I didn't go that far.
Hey, mini golf. I like that.
That's a good way to break your windmill. Someone chucking a bowling ball at it. I feel like it can take a golf ball. What if you're bowling at the windmill?
Make the windmill out of foam. That way it just bounces off.
Have extra windmill panel things. Just or hanging out in the back.
For a drunken bowler.
I think we're way off topic here.
I think 4 hours is legit.
That's fair.
Yeah. You know, if something comes up and you're going to run into a delay or something like that, you just get a hold of your parents, say, hey, we're running late. Just let them know. The main thing is just don't have a lot of idle time. Otherwise, you know, being alone with idle time, it's just going to get you into trouble. So,
yeah. It's like stopping at the gas station when your family's out of town and you feel like there are no strings on what you could buy.
Ooh.
It's like that.
Holy cats, you just described the last 6 years of my life.
Boo, you got to knock that off. That's a dangerous place. You walk in, you think, I can literally buy anything in this store for me.
Man, that's been grocery shopping as an adult. Mm-hmm. Like, I show up and I'm just like, here's the deal. I can afford anything in here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And no one will see me eat any of this.
You know what you should do, Boo?
It is on.
Yeah, here's what you do. You need to have your groceries delivered.
That's awesome.
Yeah, eliminate the exercise of grocery shopping.
No. Great. Eliminate the risk of grocery shopping.
Is that your source of exercise at a grocery store?
Hey, man, you have no idea about my life. Like, and I cannot say that as a war veteran more enough. You do not understand my life.
Yeah, but if it's a risk, and this is true for me, too. Like, if I go to the store and I end up buying foolish things.
No, I just need to go when I'm not hungry.
No, that's never going to happen.
Not true.
I could always eat a Reese's peanut butter cup, and they're always available right by the register.
Yeah, but I don't have trouble with sweets.
Well, the beef jerky.
No, I don't have that either.
Baked potato?
I don't have any of that problem.
Okay, what food causes you trouble that we could use as an example?
Well, it's not anything like, hey, man, I see that, I'm going to grab it. It's like, hey, man, I'm going to grab stuff for meals and then not make meals.
Oh, just kind of.
Then just eat all of it.
Go at it, you know? It's like, hey, man, I just spent 50 bones on groceries for the next couple of days. But they were there.
Hours.
Like, I need a grocery shop one day at a time.
So you need someone to sell you the completed lasagna.
Right. So that I need someone to make me healthy stuff and bring it over one serving at a time. Like, Eric, you just drive over to my house every couple hours and go, hey, troll, here's your meal. And then drive away so that my fridge and all of my, my refrigerator and all of my cabinets are empty at all times.
Hey, man, you're just like the dog. If you promise not to mess in my house, you can come stay with me.
Hey, man, I have I can dish you out food twice a day. Just like your dog.
Hey, man, I watched a dog. We dog sat for somebody a couple months back, and I wake up in the morning to go to work. It was like 4 a.m. I had somewhere to be, and this dog had taken a mess on top of my computer. Like, I left my computer open, my work computer, because I was doing stuff. And I get up and I'm like, what is that? That's some dog mess.
Like, on the keyboard and stuff?
Yeah, I immediately looked at my own dogs like, you've betrayed me. And then I looked at it closer, I'm like, no, that's not my dog's mess. No, I was so mad at that dog.
Hey, that dog did not do that voluntarily. That's uncomfortable. Someone set you up. Whoever you borrowed the dog from has been practicing that for weeks.
All right, here's the computer, dump, go.
There's just no reason for it.
So on a totally different note, I kind of disagree. I think 4 hours is kind of limiting.
Yeah.
I'm like the one guy who disagrees, but...
Actually,
4 hours per week? I mean...
No, per date.
But it's once a week.
Right.
So that's four hours a week.
It doesn't mean that that's your only contact, because you can still phone and talk and things like that. So there's still room for conversation.
But he's a year and a half older, which means he's just starting college, and she's in high school. So she's like 16, and he's 16 or 17.
Right, and then he's probably 18 or 19.
18 or 19. Yeah, I mean, yeah, 4 hours seems a little limiting to me. I guess I don't see the problem in letting him hang out longer than that.
Yeah.
I don't know. That just seems kind of...
It says overly restricted.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't go much more, but I mean, I guess maybe it's just maybe I'm a little bit rebellious in nature. When someone tells me 4 hours, I want five. So it's just like, I would probably say, hey, you have a one segment of a day time period.
You mean like an afternoon?
An afternoon, a morning, whatever, you know, yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. There's something about it I just don't like. Okay. And I'm in a position where I did have a high school girl with a college boyfriend.
And did you set up restrictions?
Not that tight. No. Of course, if you have someone
responsible, though.
They're both, yeah. I mean, they were both like doing major homework and very serious about their studies, so it's never been an issue like maybe some families could have, but I don't know. I just think that seems kind of yeah.
What's secular say?
Secular says, in my opinion, it is very important that your primary concern, and Colton's too, should be earning good grades and completing your education. Both of your futures depend on it. Not really. That said, if there are special events coming up that you and Colton would like to share, the curfew should be adjusted on a case-by-case basis. You know, my tolerance for people and their education blasting is just, I just don't have it. Here's the thing, they set kids up to fail.
education, education, college, college, college. And all we got is a bunch of people with debt getting out. They can't afford to do anything, don't know how to do anything, and are frankly not skilled to do anything. They just attended college because you told them they had to, or their life would be ruined.
Yeah.
And really, if you'd have just gotten that job as a janitor right off the bat, you'd be running the place by the time you're 35, and you wouldn't have $150,000 worth of debt when you got out. Yeah. I'm not saying it's for everybody, but I'm just saying, like, don't listen to people when they say that your lack of education is going to ruin your life. Maybe God don't have a plan for you to go to college. Maybe you boisted this thing up and put yourself in all kinds of debt for no reason. It was just a complete waste.
Yeah. Actually, you know, it was along those same lines. It's easier to look back at those circumstances and be like, well, but all those have made me the person I am today. And I don't know, that's a pretty popular Facebook item too. You know, like whatever I've gone through has made me the person I am today. It's like, well, you know, maybe you really didn't have to be that person.
Yeah.
Could have been someone else.
In your life.
Yeah, you're just a general schmuck that doesn't do good things.
Yeah.
Maybe those things that made you who you are a bad thing.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. People like to romanticize. They're stupid decisions. You know, like, I have no regrets. I did those things, and they made me exactly who I am. Well, you've basically taken a really crappy period of your life, and if you remember it, like, you'd actually go back and relive it again. You'd go, this was stupid. Why would anyone volunteer to do this? There are better ways to build character and integrity besides doing something dumb and taking the lashings for it. Like, I mean, you could at least play off, say, the wisdom card and watch that you knew it was going to end up poorly, and then you skipped it. You know, yeah. Maybe did something hard that was good instead of just have it be hard just because you did something dumb. Yeah, that doesn't equal virtue.
A drug dealer might be pretty good at quick mental math, but that doesn't mean a math course would have been the better way to do it.
Yeah, right.
All right, hang on. Back it up for a second. Okay, this is a high school student, and her boyfriend is in college, so I'm going to assume he is at least a student.
Okay,
so
I'm with you.
For both of them, their primary role in life right now is student, which means that they need to be making good grades. Now, if she wants to not be a student after she graduates high school, that's fine. She can do whatever she wants. But right now, she is a student, which means that she needs to be applying and getting the best kind of grades that she can.
Hmm. For what end?
That's basically her job.
Yeah,
right
but
now
to what
is
end, though?
To be a student.
Yeah, but but why?
I assume graduation. I mean, that's usually what students go for.
So it's time to get out. It's a waste. It's a waste of time and money.
Mike, you've not only bailed on college, but you're saying high school's out too.
You know what? Great. Just forget it. Whatever happened to the old blacksmith apprentice? You know what I'm saying? Where's that guy? People love that guy.
This is the second time you've said that last month, Mike.
I'm just saying. People love that guy.
Okay, but if that's the case, then drop being a student.
Yeah, get out.
Okay.
I'm with you.
Right now, the thing is,
then you can spend more
time
with Colton.
That's her job. She's a student.
Hmm.
She needs to be doing grades.
You can't be an apprentice to Colton. That doesn't work.
No.
You could still spend more time with
That'll
him as you're learning
places.
To be a shoemaker.
No. If she's going to be a legitimate cobbler, then she needs to move to that and then can decide what time can be put to Colton. But, like, not going to school and being with Colton and not being a cobbler is not a...
I'm not saying that you got to hang on to the guy with a rope. I'm just saying maybe you can spend 8 hours a week with him instead of four.
Oh, wait, shoot. I didn't even understand. That was per week?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, I agree with Dan. That's overly harsh.
Well, then.
I wondered you guys were all like all in. I thought, really? Four hours a week?
I was thinking a night. Like,
we oh, well, yeah, that'd be.
If you're going to go out at 6, you got to be in by 10. That's
yeah. I'd be all in.
Now it sounds like a bandwagon in the opposition, but I actually thought the exact same thing. I thought it was 4 hours a night.
Hey, what the heck? Where were you guys 15 minutes ago? I had to suggest he drop out of high school for you guys to pay attention.
I'm going to be blatantly honest. Ben and I were talking about my juice.
We would drink too much juice, and I was pointing to the fake sugars in there. Anyway,
would you rather be honest about it? We were talking about my juice. I'm sorry.
We were talking about Booba's juice.
I don't mind the 4 hours a week kind of thing, but then again, I'm not really attached to people. So, like, I mean, I'd rather spend time alone by myself than be with people. So
for Andrew Carson says 4 hours is way too much.
It's an increase.
Give me
in
a 25-minute texting conversation. I'll be fine.
Well, I'd rather do phone than texting, but maybe 3 minutes phone call, and I'm good. Yeah.
Is it because texting is too much effort?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, here we go. We got one more. Ready? Okay.
Yep.
Dear Life from the Path, I'm on the verge of 30, and my fiance has a huge issue with the fact that I still cuddle with my moms.
What? just can we
is that
stop
really
right
plural?
Here?
Wow.
Can we stop right here and say whatever story they're trying to tell us, they're wrong?
Let me say four more words, and then you can speak on it. But that I still cuddle with my moms. From what he says, his family isn't wild about it either.
So it's a daughter cuddling with her mom.
Still weird.
Not a dude.
Well, he...
Moving on. Mom has suffered a great deal of loss in her life. She has lost all of her immediate family, aside from her kids, to cancer. We were all caretakers for these family members doing in-home hospice, and we have formed a unique bond. My fiancé has never been to a funeral, so it's hard for me to explain this to him. What? Mom was born. What kind of idiot is this guy? I don't understand funerals.
Wait, what happens to those things?
You're telling me personally. When people walk away and don't come back, sometimes they're dead?
I dropped out of school early to hang out with Colton.
Hey, man, I didn't graduate high school. I became a cobbler.
Here it says, Mom was born in a country in Europe where hugging and lots of affection are natural. Okay, moving on. I live out of state, but when I'm home, I will put my head on my mom's shoulder and cuddle with her while watching a movie. Sometimes in the morning, I'll bring her a hot cup of coffee, put it next to her bed, and jump in with her and her dog. We joke, laugh, cuddle until we have to get up. Is this something I need professional help for, as certain people have had the nerve to tell me?
No, this is fine.
Yeah, it's fine, yeah.
This is fine.
Yeah, maybe you should stop dating Stonehenge and go and meet somebody with
us. I was going to suggest get a dog or something, but it sounds like they already have one, so...
Ain't nothing wrong with cuddling with Mom. Tough times. Love. Let's watch a movie.
I don't enjoy company of people, so I'm all against it. I'm against cuddling with Mom.
Yeah, I mean, just because everybody was born a pilgrim here in the United States, we're like, we don't really want to talk to anybody and touch them, and God forbid, give them a nice hugsy every once in a while.
Ask them if they need something to eat, because you got BK gift cards on you. Awkward.
Yeah.
All right, Bova, go ahead and disagree already. Your face looks like you've got a poop.
I am. I'm disagreeing. Man, that's okay. So I disagree with some of the cuddling. Like, I understand sitting down, watching a movie, and put like going like this. That's one thing. Like, putting your head on someone's shoulder is one thing.
He didn't say she's like nuzzling her beard.
I don't consider that cuddling. That's just sitting next to somebody. But like, I don't know. Maybe
hold on a minute. That's not sitting next to somebody. If I were to sit next to Andrew and put my head on his shoulder,
I'm going
to
punch you in the face. People,
hey, that's man, not. Oh, that would he's be just sitting next to Andrew.
That would be hysterical. No, I don't know. Maybe I just think of cuddling differently. I don't know because. Okay, so I'm be really honest about something right now. Right?
Be for real, Booba.
So
fake it.
After my dad died, my mom requested that. My mom asked me to like lay in bed with her,
mm-hmm.
and like sit on the couch and get like super comfy,
mm-hmm.
like put my arm around her and like she could lay her head on my shoulder and stuff like that. It creeped me out.
Okay,
I was 18 and I asked her why. Like I blatantly just said, "Mom, why?" She goes, "I miss your dad." I said, "I can't be that replacement. Like I can't be that physical replacement for you. That's not comfortable for me, and that's not healthy for you. You're asking for a scapegoat." When it comes from the perspective of someone just being naturally comfy and naturally cuddly, like, I understand that. That's one thing. But it sounds like this person's dealing with a lot, like, of loss, and that was specifically called out by the daughter, and that is why it's happening. That's a different situation. So someone just being naturally cuddly is one thing, but someone reaching out for physical affection because of a lack of people and the daughter filling that gap, she's putting off something that could be this woman moving on.
So you're saying the source of this thing is much more, it's got more weight to it.
Yeah, it's a lot more than this. Just this woman is cuddly. Mm-hmm. It's broken down to this woman is missing physical affection that she got from those relationships, and she's asking for a scapegoat in those relationships to be her daughter.
Now, but the daughter's basically saying that she's wondering whether she needs help because she's the one that's volunteering the cuddling.
Because she's do I need to seek that out because other people have called it out? I don't think she thinks she's wrong. I think she just doesn't understand how to set those boundaries.
Yeah, but that's
a difficult conversation to have.
But that's still under the assumption that the mom is the one that's asking for it.
I did assume that, yes.
Not just that the daughter's just cuddly on her own.
No, I did assume that the mom was asking for it based off the comments on the lack of relationships that have people have passed away from cancer and stuff like that, and on top of the fact that the statement of my mom's from Europe and is naturally cuddly.
I feel like that could be true, though. Like, there's places in African countries where, like, dudes holding hands is a pretty normal
thing.
Agreed.
And like I said, naturally cuddly is one thing. I don't think this is naturally cuddly.
Why?
I think this is someone that's reaching out for affection that they used to get from a different relationship that isn't getting it now and wants it from her daughter.
I don't know. There's some weird dynamics in there, right? Like, there's a difference between if it's like a son and a mom, but there's like a masculine
you know, have an arm around you, sense of protection, that kind of thing, versus your relationship with your daughter that is not replacing a relationship with a husband. I don't know that I can necessarily imply that it's the same problem.
Okay, well, that's the implication that I'm drawing.
I think, yeah. I don't know about that.
I feel like
I hear what you're saying, and I think I think you're right. And it was very very impressive, Booba. Actually, like, that's a hard reaction to have, is to say I can't be that.
When it sucked. It hurt. Yeah, it hurt
to see your mom feeling that way and know that she otherwise is longing for something you can't reasonably provide in a healthy way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's difficult. But I don't know. I probably have to know these people a lot closer to be able to make that.
Okay, make that's fair. Decision.
All right, Secular says, it should be clear to you by now that you are engaged to a man who comes from a family that isn't comfortable with physical demonstrations of affection and is quick to judge others. Treasure the closeness you have with your mother while you have it, because after she's no longer with you, that special kind of affection will be permanently over. For your fiancé or his family to suggest that there's something wrong with cuddling with your mom or that you need professional help because you do it is both sad and wrong. Many people would find the relationship you share with her to be enviable, and I am one of them.
Yeah, all right.
I mean, here's the deal. It's like whether the source of the cuddling is good or not good, or whether it's the best situation, what really can be said is this man is a 2x4. You're dating a 2x4. He's gone about this all wrong. His family accusations are wrong. Everything about the way that they're handling that situation, if it comes from a source of pain or loss, they're handling it poorly. If it comes from a source of you're European and you just love people, And they're criticizing that, that's also being handled poorly. So really, all we need to know is that the fiance and his family are wrong in every possible way.
Yeah, but I think you always got to be real careful when you're a party in a conversation of which you're the guy that says, "Yeah, you should go to counseling." Right? Like, it implies a serious ability to pass judgment on a circumstance that may have overextended what you know or are capable of knowing.
Yeah.
In a certain circumstance.
We don't do hugs in this family. We do whiskey. So. Change your ways.
Mom's like, sits close on the couch. You need counseling. You know that's in the wrong. I don't know about that. Hey, you've been listening to Life from the Path. Maybe you cuddle on your mom's right now on the couch. Make sure you do that in a couple years. Whoever you are. We're talking about Bob Eisenhower, blah, 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 blah. Plum concert coming up. That's on Sunday, blah, 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 blah. Faithful Needs, God Handle the Ends. Yeah, that's it. You've been listening to Life from the Path. We will see you guys next week. Thanks for hanging out.